Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. Lots to get through today. Later on in the show, Stevie Nicol names the four defenders he would put in the Premier League Hall of Fame. Two of them, by the way, play for Manchester United. Craig Burley looks back at that famous back pass to David Beckham in the FA Cup as today marks the 24th anniversary of that faux pas from the Scotsman. Ali Moreno, Sid Lowe, Julien Laurent, Sebastian Salazar, Julie Foudy and Frank Leboeuf also with us as well. But we start, as we do every show, taking a look at how the coronavirus is affecting football around the world. Some concerning news coming out of Turkey is the former international goalkeeper Rustu Rekpa is in critical condition. That's after testing positive for the virus. Meanwhile, in England, Newcastle put all non-first team staff on furlough. Spurs have cut all 550 non-playing staff wages by 20%. They've been put on furlough where appropriate. Meanwhile, UEFA to discuss the future of this season's Champions League on Wednesday. And it's there that I want to start with Julien Laurent. This is a very significant meeting, isn't it, on Wednesday, Jules?
You're right, Dan. It's a big one on Wednesday via video conference call, obviously, with UEFA and the 55 federations. Because first and foremost, they will talk about the future of the season, Champions League and Europa League, as you mentioned, with UEFA presenting, in a way, the three plans that they have, A, B and C, for what could be the rest of the Champions League and the Europa League, depending on when we will be able again to play football, when we will finally get the green lights to resume the seasons. And it will all obviously depend on those days. It could be mid-May, it could be end of May, it could be end of June. They will present that, but I think Alexander Seferin as well, the UEFA president, will also remind everyone that we'll have to be ready, to be prepared, that maybe they might not be able to play any football between now and the end of June. And in that case, maybe, like he mentioned it at the weekend in an interview, we will have to start to think about the fact that this season could be finished, that this season could be over, that we might not be able to finish and resume the current season like everybody wants. And then in that case, a decision will have to be made on what we do with the season. Do we void it? Do we take the last game and say that that's the end of the season and take it from there? So this will be very important. Also, they will mention with each different federation what they will do, what they have in mind for their domestic leagues and how they can see their domestic league being finished. And also the very important questions of players' contract, what would happen to players on loan, what would happen to players whose contract finish on June the 30th, and also obviously financial fair play with the big loss of earnings that clubs are suffering at the moment.
Why is the end of June so significant? Why can't they just say, because look, May, it's not going to happen. You know, that's clear when you take a look at what's going on around Europe. And it's very unlikely you feel that anything will get done until late summer. Why is June the 30th so important? Why can't they just extend that and say, look, when we're back, and then we'll play it out over 4 or 5 weeks? Why does it have to be all done and dusted by June the 30th? Is it just the player contracts? Because surely if it is, everyone can get on the same page, can't they, and say, right, we will make this work, we will get this done. We don't need to avoid it if we kind of organise this all in the right way.
So, yes, I think ideally the date of June the 30th is very symbolic for that, mostly for the players' contract. Like we said, a lot of them will be out of contract with the current clubs. A lot of players, I think it's a third of Serie A players and third of La Liga players who are either out of contract in the summer on June the 30th, or where the loan finishes it on June the 30th. So that's the first thing. I think also practically for UEFA and for the European competition, that's usually the point where they will have already to think about the next season, the following season, think about clubs who will go through the qualifiers for the Champions League and for the Europa League and those three rounds of qualifiers and the playoffs and all of that. So of course, I think if UEFA have to think about extending that date, they will. If there's a possibility, for example, to play the remaining games in the Champions League and the Europa League in July, and it's possible with the domestic leagues as well, of course they will think about it. But I think right now the idea is if we can finish by June the 30th, that would be better for everyone else. And that's why it's the date that Seferin and UEFA have put forward, because that would make so many things far easier if by then every European Games could be finished. We could have played the Europa League final, we could have played the Champions League final. That would be ideal. But I think, considering the extreme situation at the moment and the circumstances, of course, UEFA will not be close to extending that date and looking into finishing the Champions League and Europa League in July, maybe even in August or September, for all we know. But I think in Seferin's mind and people at UEFA's mind, it would be so much better if by June the 30th, everything could be done.
Meanwhile, Jules, of course, as I mentioned at the top, the Premier League clubs now are addressing how they're going to deal with non-playing staff. We saw Newcastle and Spurs putting them on furlough. People coming out and saying, hey, wait a minute, Barcelona are going to pay all their staff 100% thanks to the players. Why is that not being replicated in the Premier League?
Because the Premier League seems to have taken a different path, where instead of having each club deciding on what they do with their first team squad or non-playing staff, like we saw with Juventus and Barcelona, Bayern Munich, other clubs through Europe, it looks like this, the Premier League will do it centrally. So the Premier League have a big meeting as well, a bit like UEFA one, but on Friday at lunchtime, where it will be discussed with all the 20 clubs in the Premier League what to do with players' wages. And I think the idea and the expectations for many clubs, including Newcastle and Spurs, is that a decision will be taken on Friday by the Premier League, agreed with all the clubs in the Premier League, that centrally it will be decided that all Premier League players will have their wages cut then. So it's not Arsenal and Manchester United and Manchester City and Liverpool all taking that decision by themselves. It's the Premier League saying, with everybody agreeing, let's have all our players in our league, all taking a 20%, 30%, 50%, whatever, 70% pay cut, and we all agree to it, and we all make it official on Friday. And then if clubs want to do the same for their non-playing staff, like Newcastle and Spurs have done, then so be it. They can do it to save more money, to make more cuts, to save more money because of the loss of earnings that they're suffering at the moment. But that's why Newcastle and Spurs have done it, just for the non-playing staff, because they expect, I think, the Premier League to announce it on Friday or very soon for the whole Premier League clubs, all Premier League players to have that pay cut.
Julien Laurent, thank you very much. If you want more of Jules, and let's face it, who wouldn't? You can join him for the Gab and Jules podcast, the latest edition available now to download.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the Geico Giveback, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We, of course, led with the news yesterday that Barcelona players will pay 100% of their salaries to the non-playing staff, and Lionel Messi coming out criticising the board. Response today from Bartomeu saying the predicted revenue for this season was 1 billion euros and we were flying in February ahead of predictions. We will continue to be the biggest earning football club. All clubs have a drop in income right now and we are working quickly to act on that. Sid Lowe with us once again. Sid, this is a bit tone deaf, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely it is. And you know, you take the front page of any of the Catalan newspapers over the last 4 or 5 days and you get this really jarring juxtaposition of there's a financial crisis on the one side. What are the players going to do? What kind of pay cuts will there be? How will this be dealt with? And then on the same page, and in the summer, we're going to go and sign Neymar or Lautaro Martinez or whoever it may be. And of course, this is something, by the way, and I think it really is worth pointing this out, that the players are aware of. And part of the conversations between club and players over the last few days involve the players effectively saying, all right, but if you're telling us that this is necessary, if you're telling us that the survival of the club is at stake, we don't want to be in a situation where in the summer, all of a sudden, all of this money is being thrown at a new signing. And as you say, even if the two things are compatible, even if there is a way that you need this money now, you need these pay cuts now, and you can still go into the market in the summer, to say it like this, I completely agree with you. I think it's very tone deaf.
Let's welcome Ali Moreno into the show. Ali is a former player. If you're playing and you had your chairman coming out and saying this, it's an interesting juxtaposition, as Sid says. How would you react?
You know, I wonder how a guy like Bartomeu actually gets to be president of a club like Barcelona, because every time he opens his mouth or every time that he puts a statement out, you just have to ask the question, how is this guy in this position of power? A guy who clearly tone deaf, I think it's the first thing that you can say. But then you can go on and talk about the fact that a couple of days ago, he was painting a picture of financial woes for Barcelona. And now, 2 days later, he's saying, hey, look, we got plenty of resources. We can go and get whoever we want to. And it all seemed to be a response to whatever Lionel Messi has to say and whatever the player has to say. The one thing that I think Bartomeu and whoever is part of this board, I think, is ignoring is that they cannot win and they will never win the PR battle, the public relations battle against the players. Because the players are the ones that the fans relate to. They're the ones that they want to be like. They're the ones that really set the example, that set the point of reference for Barcelona. Nobody ever says, you know what I like to be in my life? I like to be like Bartomeu. No, they want to be like Lionel Messi. And so in you trying to win the public relations battle against the players and a divine creature in Barcelona like Lionel Messi, who is God to Barcelona fans, then you not only are you going to lose, but you lose sight of the fact of who you are and what you really mean to this club. And you forget and lose sight of something that is very basic. Do your job. Do your job, stay in your lane, do your part, help this club and provide this club with a platform from where the great players that they have available can do their job and win you the trophies that you want to win.
And then, by the way, Sid, I suppose you can look back to last summer and say, well, if you're all so powerful and you have all this money, why don't you bring Neymar in then? Why is it becoming an issue now this summer?
Well, absolutely. And look, there is a reason why Barcelona were the first Spanish club to turn to these kind of measures. So far, I think it's four clubs that have said they're going to. But there's a reason they were first, and that's because their financial situation was the most precarious. Now, of course, we have to be fair to them, and we have to say that nobody foresaw this crisis. Nobody foresaw a situation in which the club would literally stop for 2 weeks, in which the museum's shut, the shops are shut. You can't buy a Barcelona kit online, at least not from the club. There's no games, there's no ticket revenue, there's no stadium generation of money during matches. All of that stuff is true. But it's still, we've only been in lockdown for a little over 2 weeks. It happened so fast because they were so much on the edge. And you're quite right. There was a reason why they didn't go to Neymar in the summer, or there were a number of reasons. And one of them was because fundamentally they couldn't really afford this. Now, you go back to 2015. Since then, Barcelona have spent €1 billion on signings. And I genuinely think that while this is perhaps debatable, you can go through the list of players, and I think it's something like 22, 23 players. There is not a single player in that list who has been an unqualified success for Barcelona. It's just extraordinary the amount of money they've wasted. They're two most expensive players of all time. One of them is on loan at Bayern Munich. The other, yeah, it's not their fault that he keeps getting injured, but he does keep getting injured, and he's done virtually nothing in the time that he's been at Barcelona, largely through no fault of his own. Barcelona, when they signed Neymar, one of the directors came out and said, well, of course we're not just going to spend all this money, €222 million. It would be irresponsible if we did so, and we would have to leave. We would be forced out if we did that because it would be irresponsible. Within 6 months, they spent €300 million. That tells you part of the reason, not why this situation has been created, but why they were so ill-equipped to deal with this situation.
So it brings up an interesting point regarding in the summer, if Barcelona go and spend all this money, Ali, this player then arrives in the locker room. Is there a little resentment there considering what the players have sacrificed and what those who work within the club who weren't playing have sacrificed as well?
Well, it depends who that player is. Because if it is Neymar, then we're led to believe by the players that, hey, this is the guy that we wanted all along. Why haven't you been here? You're the guy who's going to take us to the next level. You're going to be the guy who's going to transition us from the Messi era to whatever is ahead for this club. What I would say to that player, whoever that player may be, is, if I were representing him, is, hey, bud, at this point, I think it would be best if we took less money, all right? If we took not the best deal available to us, but we took less money, and we in some ways show a good faith agreement with not necessarily Barcelona as a club, but with the players that you're going to deal with on a daily basis, with your teammates. If you put out there that sort of olive branch and say, you know what, I'm not going to take the best market available or the best deal available in the market. I'm going to take a deal that is representative of my skill set, but I'm also mindful of what's going on in the world. That in itself would send a powerful message, and I think it would open the door of the locker room for you, whoever you are, as you walk into a place that you know is very difficult to perform in.
Ali Moreno, thank you very much. Thanks to Sid Lowe as well. Extraordinary scenes, really, in Catalonia over the last 48 hours. The transfer talk, of course, continues. Go over to the website, click on transfer talk for all the latest news. Look at this. Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol with you at the same time. What a treat. Gentlemen, we've got quite the eclectic mix of topics to go through with you. I want to start with our ongoing theme of the Premier League Hall of Fame. Stevie, let's start with you. Give me four defenders.
My fourth in line would be Vincent Kompany. Some would say that he hasn't retired yet. In my opinion, he's certainly retired at the top level, and I will be shocked if he puts his strip and his boots back on again when, of course, we start playing. You talk about an inspirational leader, and Man City's last title, they only won it because this guy got fit and was right at the heart of the defence. At three, I've got Jaap Stam. Not so much a leader in the mould of a company, but a hard-nosed defender who let nothing pass, who was only interested in defending, wasn't interested in being a Franz Beckenbauer type of player. He just wanted to get in the battle and defend. So Jaap Stam at three. At two, John Terry. And I think John Terry sometimes gets labelled as, you know, the leader, the captain, the one they all look up to. I think we forget how good a football player John Terry was. Again, like all great players, he made things look easy because he was always in the right place at the right time. And of course, if you look at the titles and the personal awards he's won and the longevity, John Terry, no question, up there with the best in the Premier League ever. But the man I think that's just eclipsed John Terry is Rio Ferdinand. For me, the complete footballer, a captain, a leader, a guy who could pass the ball for fun, a guy, again, who make things look easy, wasn't particularly pacey, but was never beaten, could always read the situation before it began, and really a guy who for a decade kept Manchester United at the very top of world football. So four fantastic players in my opinion, but right at number one for me it has to be Rio Ferdinand.
Mr. Craig Burley.
Well, that was a snooze fest, wasn't it? Did somebody tell him he had to give a long answer on each and every one? I mean, good grief. I've put me up bed down here while I was listening to that. Look, in no particular order, because I haven't had that much time to think about it. I'm only going one different from Stevie. But I'm going with, John Terry because of the longevity and the quality. The same with Rio Ferdinand because of the longevity and the leadership. And I'm going with Vincent Kompany for all those reasons. Quality footballer, maybe slightly more in the modern game. And then I'm back a little bit. I would disagree slightly with Jaap Stam, although I think Jaap Stam was a wonderful footballer. But I think when you go back for a time frame, and even though this guy's career eclipsed before football began, before there was a Premier League, it did roll into the Premier League era, and there was a lot of success and a lot of adversity, and that would be Tony Adams. I think Tony Adams was the epitome of the old-school centre-half. He marshalled an Arsenal defence with Dixon, Keown, Bold and Winterburn. And without Tony Adams, I don't think Arsenal would have had the platform, and Arsene Wenger would have had the platform to take Arsenal forward.
Meanwhile, Stevie, we've seen a lot of people try and take on the toilet paper challenge. One man you would expect to be good at it would be Kenny Dalglish, but made a complete hash of it several times. Seemed to be wearing a slipper on one foot, a shoe on the other. What's your former teammate doing?
Well, he's, whatever he's doing, he's not doing it very well. I certainly, I hope it's not his last role, number one. Two, it's a good job he wasn't as inaccurate on the field of play as he was in this. And three, there's a reason why he's bad at that. Is because in football, fortunately, we don't play with a roll of toilet paper. Otherwise, he would not be King Kenny of, or King of the Cop or Sir Kenny or any of that nonsense. So he failed miserably, which is unlike him because he doesn't fail at anything usually. So he had a go. I guess you've got to give him credit for that.
Groundbreaking news, you play with a football, not toilet paper. We were breaking it down here throughout the show. Thank you, Stevie. Meanwhile, Craig, you posted a classic picture, it has to be said, yeah, of Stephen on the golf course a couple of years ago with his Bushnell.
Yeah, I came across it and it still tickles me to this day, the fact that he got this present as a Bushnell and he was looking, he still says I'm part of it, but he was looking in the wrong end for at least 13 holes. Is that correct or not, Mr. Nicol?
Let me tell you something. I was completely looking through the wrong end, and Mr. Smarty Pants said, give it to me and I'll sort it out. And guess what he did? He looked through the wrong end as well.
Yes,
so don't listen to him saying it's all down to me.
What I would say is that I didn't actually have the instructions. You actually brought the instructions with you onto the golf cart and were reading them going down the first hole and still got it wrong.
All right, then. Is that going to be your excuse for the other day, not having the instructions to push a golf trolley, the same one that you rammed right into the back of my legs and sent me flying? Did you have to have instructions for that as well?
Yeah, we didn't have a camera for this yesterday, Dan. We should have had a camera. There was no cars at the golf club, and we were walking down the first hole. And I was adjusting his driver, the degree on it, with the little tool that you use. And my push cart, which, because it was wet, as you know, I don't really walk. I'm too lazy. But my push cart went down the path.
Yeah. Never mind the brake. Never mind there's a brake on it.
And I shouted on him, "Watch your back." And he didn't turn around. This cart hit him on the back. He went all the way back onto his back, legs in the air, and the two golf carts went with him. I wished I had a camera to see it, but unfortunately we didn't.
You two are like an old married couple. Absolutely.
I have got something to admit here, and I have to say this now because I'm being honest. Stevie knows I use a Bushnell watch for my yardage, and he's got that thing that utensil that you saw in the photo. But my watch, after the winter, I couldn't get it to work, and I kept saying to Stevie, it keeps saying 999 yards on it. I can't get it to work. So I went into the pro shop, and I said to Kevin, the pro, "Kev, I can't get this thing to work," but it was working last year, and he said, "You've got it on the golf club in the next town." So I've got to admit, I was at the wrong golf club.
Last thing with you, Craig. A lot of people on Twitter have been sending me this over the last 24 hours as it marks the anniversary of your famous back pass to David Beckham in that semi-final at Villa Park.
Yeah, Villa Park. I saw it this morning. 24 years ago, I believe. As I've always said, Daniel, the man that never made a mistake, never made anything. In fact, Man United have been so mediocre in recent years, they might need some more outside help to try and get them back on the tails of Man City and Liverpool. So if you want some more help, Man United, in getting you over the line, I'm available. Call Craig in Connecticut, and that might get you out of your mediocrity.
Gentlemen, as always, thank you very much. Go over to the website, by the way, to read about one of Stevie's former players who's now tackling the virus in New York as a physician.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents. Napa Know How.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned NAPA. Because right now, when you order from NAPA online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's NAPA know-how.
NAPA know-how!
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
Any excuse is worth it, isn't it? Look back at that incredible debut for Zlatan Ibrahimovic for LA Galaxy. Check out Good Read over there. I Was There feature. Go over there to the website to check that out. Meanwhile, let's go over to Sebastian Salazar and Julie Fowley. First time we've had the chance to hear from them since the postponement of the Olympics.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Julie, for the time as well. We have a new start date for the Olympics. It'll be July 23rd, 2021, Julie. This is major news in the world of women's soccer. It's a full senior world championship that has been postponed. But I'm curious to get your thoughts on the one-year delay, and specifically if you think that one-year delay, Julie, makes the U.S. more or less likely to win gold in Japan.
Great question, Sebastian. I actually think it makes them more likely to win gold because there has never been, as we've talked about, there's never been a team to win the Women's World Cup and then in that tight turnaround the very next summer win the Olympics. And with this gap and pushing it back a year, it gives the chance for the team to reset, to recover, to breathe, to take a big breath. I mean, they're tired. So I actually think this is good news for the United States.
It's going to impact the timelines for a lot of players in the player pool and on the roster. But I think the first name that comes to mind is Alex Morgan. She's especially important to talk about today because she actually just came out on the cover of Glamour magazine. She's the cover story of this month's issue. And she had some interesting quotes in her article. I'll read one of them to you here. It's actually about the postponement of the Tokyo Olympics. Quote, I tried to look at it more from a team perspective, but I couldn't help but think of myself with all of the stress that's going on from the coronavirus on top of trying to get back in shape in such a short amount of time. That's the best decision to level the playing field for all athletes in all events. I know U.S. fans thinking about another gold medal will think that their chances are a lot better with Alex Morgan in the lineup. Just how much better and how different does she make this U.S. team, Julie?
Well, she gives options. I mean, and we know what she can do on the field in terms of scoring and big moments, big goals. So you have that. And for her to realistically have a baby mid-April and try and swing around to be ready again when they name the team, June was going to be tight, right? And so now this buys her time to get fit. And with Alex Morgan in the equation, they're a better team. I mean, this team is strong without Alex Morgan. They're excellent with her. So it's just more options, more looks, more rotation that Vlatko Andonovski can go to.
I don't think anybody would look at this U.S. team and say that they're too young. There's a lot of players with a lot of experience, right? So I'm thinking about players like Carly Lloyd. She'll be 39 when these Olympics are played. Megan Rapinoe, Becky Sauerbrunn, they'll be 36 now when these Olympics are played. Mm-hmm. That extra year wait, does it make you at all have any types of concern about age when we do finally get to the Japan Olympics?
Yeah, it's a great question. Typically, I would say, yes, I am a little concerned at 39, 36, when your core of your group is in your mid-30s. But I think actually the opportunity to recover and reset, given all that they've been doing, victory tour after the World Cup, and then they had to finish off their league season, and then they have sponsorship appearances and things they've been doing. I mean, this group hasn't stopped. Then they had Olympic qualifiers in January, so they never took a break. So I would say actually the wait and the delay helps them more than I'm concerned about the age issue, especially as we've seen. I think athletes are just getting smarter about how they're training, how they're staying fit as they get into the mid-30s. And so I think this group is actually redefining how long you can continue to play at a high level. And we've seen with Vlatko Andonovski, he realizes they're not going to go six games, 90 minutes. And so he's starting to work in a rotation plan where they can utilize the great strength and the depth of the United States.
One thing about this situation, and this isn't just in the U.S. pool, but across the globe, this gives everybody a year to improve. As you look at the U.S. pool, though, who in that pool do you think stands to benefit the most from that year to improve?
I think actually a young player like a Mallory Pugh, who we've seen now be left off the Olympic qualifying roster. And she's one of the younger players out there with so much promise and potential. And yet she's lost her confidence a bit. She hasn't looked the same as we saw her in the last Olympics. I mean, when she was just an 18-year-old. So I think this is an opportunity for her to reset as well, to get that confidence back. It buys her a little more time to get back into the equation. And for Vlach Volodynovsky, now he's got a little breathing space where he can look at younger players. And so she could possibly benefit, I think, the most from that younger group in trying to get back into that mix. And again, it bears repeating over and over again, this is a roster of 18 players you're looking at versus 23 for the World Cup.
Julie, we're now about, what, 2 weeks into this practice of social distancing. Obviously, this is impacting pro athletes in every walk of life when it comes to their preparations. What's the latest you're hearing about what the U.S. women are doing to stay in shape and also to stay in touch? Because I'd imagine communication is important this time.
Yeah, well, Crystal Dunn is raising chickens and chasing them, I'm sure. That's what she posted on social media. I actually checked in, and what they're doing right now is they're the U.S. soccer's strength and conditioning program has gone to every single player and they've said, okay, what is your equipment you have? What is your access to facilities? Some have private gyms that they're able to access with no one else in them. They could actually get in there on their own. So they're social distancing there. Some have fields that they're able to go to. Carly Lloyd, for example, is training at James Galanis's academy. And so depending on what the player has, they're then tailoring an individual program to adapt and adjust to what they have available to them. And so they're obviously training. It's kind of like old school times when we were training on our own, like, oh, this is how we lived, right? Hey, we didn't have any help. So I think this is, they're able to continue to perform, and some have fields, some don't, but they're tailoring their exercises specifically to that.
Julie, speaking of old times, you caught up with some friends, Mia Hamm and Abby Wambach, on the ESPN FC YouTube channel. Folks should be definitely sure to check that out. That's all the time we've got. Dan, back to you.
We discussed this yesterday. Benzema in his Instagram Q&A talking about Giroud, saying, well, you don't confuse F1 and go-karting, and that is me being kind. Let's welcome in Frank LaBeouf to the show. Frank, what was your reaction when you saw this?
Well, Dan, I was appalled, because the question is not to know if it's the truth or not. It should have been said or not. And the question is no, of course not. First, you have to show respect between the players, and you have to show humbleness. And in fact, what he showed is vanity. And I don't like that kind of comment. We all make comments, and we all make mistakes in life, and especially when you're a football player, and we've been asked to say many, many things. But you have to respect the old players. I like the way that he talked after, when he say, I'm the go-karting, if you compare me to Ronaldo, the Brazilian Ronaldo, number 9, I liked it. But still, don't compare yourself and don't put yourself in the first place when you compare to somebody else, especially somebody else who has a decent or very good career with fantastic trophies like a World Cup. Benzema is a fantastic player. I don't really know him, but I know he's smarter than he showed in that comment. And really, what he did is really appalling, just to start from, just to finish the way I started. It's just appalling, and it's not Karim Benzema that I want to see, and I see when I see him on the field.
Frank LaBeouf, thank you very much. Now, Frank will be joining me for extra time alongside Ali Moreno. Frank will be answering the big question. Who was better, Michel Platini or Zinedine Zidane? Stay tuned to find out his answer. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. It is really good to hear from you at the moment. Alejandro Moreno and Frank LaBeouf, my guests today. Frank, I want to start with you. Do you think a swap for Pogba with De Ligt would be a good move for Manchester United?
I do. I think alongside Maguire, that would be good to have De Ligt and see what he can do. And obviously, Pogba wants to go away, so that could be a good bargain for Manchester United. Yeah, I will sign for it. Yeah.
Ali?
Well, that's assuming that you actually have a player in mind and a player in place that is going to take that position in the middle of midfield for Manchester United. Because, well, De Ligt, yeah, will solve a problem in the back line alongside Maguire, but then you still have a Pogba-sized hole in that middle of midfield. You have Bruno Fernandes, who has done a wonderful job, but you also have to then address that situation. If there's no Pogba, if there's no box-to-box midfielder, who is that guy going to be? So if you have that player in mind and you have a plan in place in order to acquire that player, then so be it. But until then, you have to resolve what the Pogba issue means to you long term. And so if you just want to get rid of the guy, yeah, sure, get value in return in Matthias De Ligt, but you also have to address what you do in the middle of midfield.
Meanwhile, Frank, the age old question: who's a better player, Zidane or Platini?
Ooh.
Controversy. Oh my God! Last time, you know, you asked me about Vidic and Van Dijk, and people, I've seen that on internet, yeah, or Instagram. They hammered me, you know. But it's hard because it's always between fantastic players. But because of my generation, and I play with Zidane. But, you know, you always have the fantasy of playing with your idol. So, of course, Platini will be, for me, better than Zidane because he represents my childhood. He represents the love of football and people who taught me how to play well. And Platini was, at the time, you know, fighting with Maradona to know which ones was the better one. So, yeah, Platini made my dream of being a football player, and I play with Zidane, so I have to go with the fantasy, and the fantasy will go with Platini.
It's beautiful, Frank. Dembele or Werner? Who would be the perfect deal for Liverpool, Ali?
What's that? You gotta repeat that question.
Was it again? Dembele or Werner?
Wow. Okay. Anything but Dembele. It's, yeah, Timo Werner. You go Timo Werner. Here's the problem with Dembele. You have to assume that he's going to be healthy. You have to assume that somehow he's going to mature and grow up over the next few years. And you have to assume that he's going to come good and he's going to match the expectations. I'm tired of assuming what's going to happen with Dembele. I've seen over the course of his career how a very talented player is unable to maintain any sort of level of consistency. And so, therefore, I'm going to go with a player that I know he's going to score goals for me and I know he's going to produce on a weekly basis. And that is Timo Werner.
Off the back of Benzema's comments at the weekend, this is a good question. Ali, if you were a cart, who would you say is the Formula One version of yourself?
Whatever Williams is running right now, I'm sure that they're not doing so well. And so therefore, yeah, I'm not Lewis Hamilton, I'll tell you that much. So I'm near the back of the pack trailing.
No, but in a footballing context, yeah.
Oh.
So he was saying, right, Giroud is the go-kart, he's the Formula One car. You would be the go-kart. Who would be the footballing equivalent of the Formula One Ali go-kart?
God, you lost me right now. I'm supposed to give you a player or a Formula One?
I would suggest it would be Brazilian Ronaldo.
I was back of the pack. I was giving you the back of the pack.
Can I answer for myself?
Oh, man.
Yes, you can, Frank.
Okay. That would be Beckenbauer. I understand English. That's the thing.
I see. Ronaldo.
Sorry, Ali. Ronaldo. Sorry. Yeah.
Brazilian Ronaldo.
Beckenbauer was the... Yeah. Go on.
I think, no, that all went very smoothly. They'll sort that out in the edit, don't worry. Last one.
I thought the analogy to Formula One was correct, that I was on the back of the pack like Williams is right now. Is that not the case? Is that inaccurate?
No, it was a terrible analogy.
Well, you said Formula One, so I gave you the worst Formula One team right now. What else do you want from me? I was taking a shot at myself.
Right, shut up. Who is your favorite kit? Well, sorry, what is your favorite kit that you've ever worn? Ooh. Ooh.
Oh.
Let's start with Frank, because he'll understand the question better.
Yeah. I would say the second year that I played for Chelsea, we had a, if, even if Umbro, I'm not really keen of them, but they made a shirt that were pretty nice. And after, of course, the 98 shirt for the World Cup, because it was a copy of the 84 when the French national team won the European Championship, so they made a copy to bring luck to our team, and it worked. So yeah, it was nice and it was meaningful. So yeah, we'll pick that one.
Ali.
Well, my favorite, on a side note, is the 1988 Netherlands national team jersey when they won the Euros. That was iconic. That I wore myself, I would say the all-black uniform with the Columbus crew. And then I think more significant than that is the national team jersey that hangs behind my head right now. The Vino Tinto is something special. And every time I put that on, it was a special experience for me.
Would it still fit now, Ali? It probably would after your diet.
Yeah, yes, sir. Yes, it fits quite nicely, actually, let me tell you.
Thank you very much to Ali and Frank LaBeouf. Just a reminder, ESPN FC back with you tomorrow. Keep your tweets coming in at ESPN FC.
What about Formula One? No?
No. Go back home.